Hello, this is Nicholas Brendan, and you're listening to the Rule Zero Podcast.
Thank you.
From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
I'm here at the Origins Game Fair at the Indie Games Showcase booth with Matthew McFarland and Michelle Lyons McFarland. And we're going to talk about a couple of games that they've written and they are selling here at the Game Fair. So we're going to start with Curse the Darkness. How's that sound? Okay, tell me about Curse the Darkness.
All right, so Curse the Darkness is a post-apocalyptic role-playing game. And your basic pitch is this. In 2012, a man walks out of the shadows with monsters behind him and says, here's the rules. No more ideology. No more religion, no more commerce, no more nationality. You just take care of each other, or the monsters kill you. That's the rules. This doesn't go as well as he might have liked. You can't put a gun to somebody's head and say, be a good person, but he's the only one that controls the monsters. So now it's 10 years later, about half the world's population's gone, and what you're faced with in play is this good enough for you? Can you live under the radar and follow the rules and survive, or do you want to fight back and reclaim some of your identity? That is, do you light a candle or curse the darkness?
Okay. And so what would a session feel like with Curse the Darkness?
Well, a session for Curse the Darkness, first thing you do when you start playing Curse the Darkness is you make the decision about how long this story is going to go on. And there are 5 questions that the group answers collaboratively. And so that is, where are we? It can be anywhere in the world. What just happened? So what interesting event just kicked things off? It doesn't have to drive the whole story, but it'll usually drive at least the first scene. How are you following the rules? So how is your character or your community playing to the take care of each other rules? How are you breaking the rules? Because everybody breaks the rules. And what is the goal? So if you're playing a one-shot, the goal is going to be much more focused and immediate than it will be that if you're playing a multi-session arc. So you could play Curse the Darkness all the way through, well, I want to take him out and get the world not back to where it was, but at least back on course. Or you can do a much more, you know, well, we just have to get from point A to point B and kind of do the road movie traveling sort of a thing. The other thing to note about Curse the Darkness, though, is that characters die easily. And this is deliberate. The idea is that by talking about the people who have died, you generate memory points. You use the memory points to kind of move the story forward. Creating a character takes all of about 45 seconds once you know how to do it. And in the How to Run Curse the Darkness section of the book, I had always advised the GM, you want to make sure that there are usually NPCs around, but not throw a lot of detail into them. So somebody I was telling this to earlier, they said, they kind of exist in a quantum state. I'm like, yeah, that's really cool, actually.
Okay.
Like, so the NPC is not really detailed until somebody, you know, grabs a sheet and writes them into memory and makes them a real person.
So if somebody does die in play, they would pick up one of the when someone dies in play, they pick up one of the NPCs and sort of fill in the blanks.
Yes.
Okay. So what is the basic game mechanic of Curse the Darkness?
Curse the Darkness works on a system that I developed specifically for the game. It works on playing cards. So there's 3 decks involved. One is for the GM, and then 2 of them are separated out by suit, and then all the hearts are merged, clubs are merged, spades are merged, and that's the GM, or that's the player's decks. So your character has 4 attributes, each one based on a suit of cards. And then when you're making challenges, you've got a stack of each suit in front of you. So you might have spades of stamina, so you might have 4 in stamina. So what will be in front of you is 1 spade face up, and then 3 underneath it face down. You can perform any kind of stamina challenge, which is, you know, anything physical, running, jumping, climbing trees. Not fighting, which is a different system, because fighting can kill you. And anything that can kill you is a different kind of challenge. When you play a challenge, you play the top card. But you'll know what it is. So unlike, I mean, most role-playing games, you don't know what you're going to get until you roll the dice. In Curse the Darkness, you know what you're capable of doing. If you've got a king in stamina, man, you're awesome. You can really do a lot of different things. And if your card is 5 higher than the difficulty, you don't have to burn your card. So if you've got a king in stamina, you can do all kinds of awesome physical things that are kind of mid-level difficulty, but one really heroic effort, and you're going to spend that card and flip up the next one, which could be a two.
Mm.
And then part of the role-playing then is figuring out, like, okay, well, what happened that got me from a king to a two, or a two to a king for that?
Mm-hmm. So, any questions?
Well, let's say you see that there's a two. So then can you use that card by doing something really simple?
Yes. I usually advise that people don't do challenges that are just frivolous. If you're going to do a challenge, I wanted to establish something about your character. But certainly you can, like, if you know, like, okay, well, I only have a two in this attribute, that means that I'm only going to succeed on a challenge with a low difficulty. You can also, you know, undertake something and fail. But the other thing that you can do, too, is that characters have these things called scopes. And a scope is just a description of what that character's experience has been like, what kind of talents they have. So let's say that your scope is, we'll do an easy one, we'll say your scope is special forces, right? So, you know, you've got all this training that you obviously got before the world ended. That means that you can play the top card in a relevant attribute, and then the next card down as well. So you could have a two in stamina, but I'm special forces. I can climb up this rope or whatever special forces guys do. And I can play the next card down. So maybe that's, you know, a seven or something. Well, now okay. I've got a nine.
Okay. So how long does it take to pick up this game and be able to learn it without referring to the book?
Oh, boy, I'm the wrong person to ask. I wrote it. I think probably, I mean, obviously the best way to do it is to play it with somebody who knows it, but since, you know, folks who do are in sort of short supply. I think probably one good session to read through it, and probably you'd want to play it, like, once.
Mm-hmm.
But I think beyond that, if you get the two, because there's only two types of challenges. There's the character challenges, which is what I was describing, and then removal challenges, which work on kind of a different subsystem, but still with the cards. But once you get how the challenges work, that's really everything mechanically.
Okay.
The other thing is, too, that Curse of Darkness has an example of play that takes you all the way through answering the five questions, through removal challenges, through character challenges, to the end of a session. So it's I mean, I find those really useful when I'm reading RPGs. Like, I want to know not only how the mechanics work, but what the designer intended and kind of how all this works in context. So mm-hmm. that was definitely a priority for me to get that in there.
What's the ideal group size for this game?
I would say a GM and five players would be good. I've run it with as few as three players and as many as seven players. Seven is a little on the unwieldy side, but 4, 5, 6 works as well.
So combat is a thing you want to avoid most of the time.
But you can't. Because if you don't do removal challenges, nobody dies. Nobody dies, nobody gets memory points. Nobody gets memory points, the story doesn't move forward.
Okay.
It's a game that rewards doing things, but it's not a game where you're going to have the same character and take it all the way through. You're experiencing mm-hmm. the world, and you're probably going to get a chance to play multiple characters, which I admit is fun for me. So I like making characters.
Well, you design the game you want to play, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Anything that I didn't ask you that you want people to know about the game?
Actually, sure. There's an expansion book called Infinite Shadows, and Infinite Shadows includes rules for ghosts, because I thought it was kind of a cool idea, but I didn't want to do it in the core book because I wanted to keep the supernatural sort of out of it. But then it also hacks the game into Fate Accelerated, Savage Worlds, the World of Darkness storytelling system, and Powered by the Apocalypse.
Okay.
So, yeah.
How can someone get a hold of this game?
They can go to growlingdoorgames.com, and there are links to purchase off there. Or if you happen to be at Origins, we're at booth 520, the Indie Game Developer Network booth, and I would be happy to talk more about the game at length.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Now we're going to move over to Michelle, and we're going to talk about her game, and it's called?
A Tragedy in Five Acts.
Tell me about A Tragedy in Five Acts.
Okay. So, fair disclosure, I'm an English major. In fact, I'm an English grad student, and I like Shakespeare. And there was a Game Chef competition a few years back that was Shakespearean themed. So this really came out of my efforts to participate in Game Chef. So the idea is that Shakespeare kind of has percolated through culture, right? We all know a little bit of Shakespeare. If you say Romeo and Juliet, people have an idea what the story is, even if they've never seen the play. And that's what I wanted to draw on with this. Shakespeare uses a formula, especially in his tragedies, to kind of set up that feeling of, you know, things building and then, oh no, everything falls into nothing. So it builds on the five-act structure, and it builds on that narrative arc so that you can take anything, any setting that you want, and put it into this game over the course of an evening, and you come out with a Shakespearean feeling tragedy.
Excellent. How does it enforce the five-act feeling?
All right, so there are five acts. It's a game for five players. Each player has a role. There's daughter, lover, foil, authority, and parent. Each player, each of these roles basically informs one act. Like the daughter tends to be part of the introduction, and we start with the stable. I go over the five-act structure in the book so you know kind of what the cues are narratively for each of these. Each act is made up of three scenes. Before each scene, there's an auction, and that's really the mechanic for the game. So what happens is there's an idea round, and everybody puts forward an idea that they have for what happens in the next scene, right? So everybody has a set of tokens, you ante up, and then everybody bids on the idea that they like best. So that while you're trying to put your character forward, perhaps, or do a turn in the story that you think is really cool, everyone is constantly buying in to that idea. So the most popular idea wins, and that's the one that shows up in the next scene.
Okay.
On top of that, that's when you score. So the idea that wins, that player gets tragedy points, and then people who supported it have a chance to earn tragedy points. The person who earns the most tragedy points by the end of the game gets to name the play.
Excellent. So is there an example of play in the book?
There is. And again, it goes all the way through setting the, you know, that session's, we're answering the questions to answer that setting's setting, or answer that session's setting, sorry about that, all the way through to the fifth act at the end. And yeah, there's that. There's also another example of play available on the website. And we have dramatist personae sheets, so you can write down the cast and any secondary characters that you create over it, and also a score sheet, so you can keep track of who earns points on which scene.
Okay.
And I've got some new player cheat sheets that I'm going to be putting up after the con in PDF for free download.
Excellent. I'm a shy guy. I don't know if I have four other friends that would play this with me. Can I play this game?
Well, the thing is, you don't need iambic pentameter. You don't need to be, you know, to want to say a lot of soliloquies. You need to be able to say what your character does and get out. So really, it doesn't involve any more acting than any other role-playing game.
Okay. So are all participants actors in the story, and there is no single game master person?
There is no single game master. Each player takes a turn directing one act. So everybody has a chance to be in charge of the scene. Nobody has it all resting on them. So it really keeps things kind of egalitarian across the whole thing. There's also a mechanic for getting out early. So if you want to play, say, somebody like Mercutio, who dies in the third act, you can choose to die in the third act, and then you use any tragedy points that you've gained for narrative editing, so that you can affect what shows up in a scene, and you can play NPCs, so even if you get out early, you still get to participate.
Excellent. If somebody has a fantastic idea, but it's not their turn to run the narrative, can they do anything with that?
Well, they can certainly put it in an auction in the scene for the next scene. They can also arrange to spend a point. We also have a rule that if you want to make an addition to a scene, but everybody else agrees that it doesn't fit the story, then they can all join together to veto.
Excellent. Do you have any questions?
She answered them all.
Well, that was pretty concise. What didn't we ask you about the game?
Is it fun?
Is the game fun?
The game is actually really hilarious. There's three endings, which your character ends up either exiled, forsworn, or killed. And that sounds like it's such a downer, but when you're playing this game, everybody gets involved in the storytelling, and because of that constant buy-in, you have a lot of fun screwing your characters over in horrible ways. So, it can be very grandiose. You know, you can bring as much humor to it as you want. We did future 1970s World Fair roller skating dance competition once, and it worked perfectly. You can just bring in what you want to have.
That's excellent. How can somebody get a hold of this game?
You can go to Growling Door Games and get a link to buy it from there. You can come to Origins. Obviously, we're in booth 520, as Matt stated earlier, and come by and see us. We're also going to be at Gen Con, and you can feel free to contact us that way. Also, Drive-Thru RPG.
Excellent. Okay, thank you both very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.